The Process, a podcast about creativity and experimental music. In the world of experimental music, outcomes and accolades for creators can be uncertain and at times seem far and few between. Therefore, creators and practitioners of experimental music must embrace the one thing they will always have complete control over, the process. This podcast aims to understand this creative process by listening to new works and discussing them with their creators. Each episode focuses on one creator and their music. Understanding how and why they create can inform aspiring creatives and help audiences better understand and navigate experimental music. I'm Dr. Doug Bielmeyer, and I'll be your host as we explore the world of experimental music, creativity, and the human need to find purpose in their world and lives. This is The Process. Hey everyone, welcome back to The Process. I know it's been like a week or two since we had a show. It feels like 10 months, but it's really only been a few weeks. So what gives? What's the story? Why hasn't Doug posted an episode in 2 weeks? Is he okay? Do we need to call the authorities? I'm absolutely fine. But on October 27th, the release of my new album, Music for Billionaires, happened, and I've been a little bit busy. Busy in a good way. As Eric Salazar might remind us, busy is not a feeling, but I was busy in a good way, doing interviews, promoting the album, performing at Synthfest here in Boston. So a lot of good work that kind of kept me away from the podcast. But I'm excited about today's episode with Rodney Duplessis. I met Rodney as part of, I think it was during COVID, as part of the Nomadic Soundsters virtual residency or remote residency. And I was able to collaborate with him and kind of get to know him through that. He was a West Coast guy, and now he's working here on the East Coast, right here in Massachusetts, right near Boston here at WPI. Rodney is a wonderful combination of composer, programmer. He has software out. He has songs out. A lot of the music is very math-inspired and science-inspired. And he really takes sort of fidelity and sort of electronic music very seriously, in a good way. So on today's episode, we'll be talking about Throwaway Culture, which is the fifth track from the album Music for Billionaires, released on New Focus Recordings. We'll take a listen to the track here in its entirety on the episode. But first, let's check in with Rodney. He wanted to share with us some of his first impressions of the piece.
My first impressions of the piece were, it put me in a really sort of suspended, floating, minimalist space when I was listening to it, of just floating along, along for the ride in this, with these ostinato bells and these sort of sweeping textures that come in and out. And it was really sort of meditative in a way. And it was only 5 minutes, but it felt like a longer journey.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, great piece, Doug. I love that.
Thanks. Thanks, Rod.
So, like I said before it started, this piece sort of gives me this floating feeling, and I was thinking about why that is. And I remember listening to it and trying to decide if it was sort of centered around, E in a kind of Phrygian modal thing, or maybe like an F Lydian, because those were so prominent to me that in the bass line, especially this kind of E and F going back and forth and jumping around with a with different pitch centers. But it only sort of it felt sort of floating and tense the whole time, like it was suspended. And then it just felt like finally at the very end, I think at the very end there's like a C that's played, and it felt like it resolved. Was that sort of you want to talk about that a little bit, sort of the pitch language you used?
I think it's all about tension, and so there's the rhythmic tension that's happening, right? And then there's also the sort of, melodic or harmonic tension that's happening throughout the piece. And it's like you suggested, it's, going from, sort of having these, there's like three sort of parts that are these ostinatos that they do slowly change and they slowly evolve. But those are sort of consistent and they don't really change in pitches. So until that bass, in this version of it, the bass is introduced right away. I'm thinking of a live version I'm doing it now where it's just those repeating patterns. And I'm kind of, even in the performance, I like withhold the bass for a little bit. So it even is more ambiguous and kind of more tense in the performance. But for this, we, right away, it's the bottom, the bass comes right in. And for me, it was more about pedal, pedal tones and kind of just pivoting between, these different half steps. And so kind of always keeping that tension where sometimes the half step resolves from the previous one, but then it reveals a new tension when then compared to the next half step of like each section. So I think that's how I more envisioned it. I didn't have this like grand like circle of fifths or some type of
Sure.
like so harmonic method, but more so of just dealing with the tension that comes from half steps and then kind of treating the other three kind of repeating parts as sort of like sort of pedal tones, kind of in reverse.
It really gives this piece to my ears this kind of momentum from that ostinato of the bell 16th notes playing over and over again, and also and that unresolved tension from the way that you did the harmonic structure. It just sort of propels the piece forward, and I think the listener is swept along on the journey.
I think the thing is too is the form was really important to me, and both in like a macro level, so like the whole piece, and then also in the micro sections. So like every time we're dealing with the bass note and it's going from one half step to another, or it's going from one note to the other, in each of those sections, it starts off longer. That like the timing between the change is longer, and that just in each section it keeps getting shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter until, then it opens back up to sort of a longer, note A, note B. So I think you hear that also in the sort of bell parts or the, the three repeating parts. So I think that's constantly happening, and that happens very consistently. So this idea that there's this elongation and shrinking, elongating and shrinking, that happens very predictably. So I think it kind of enables me really to do anything then in the piece, because as long as you kind of keep that form and that precedent, then really I could just kind of put anything in it. And it still feels like it sort of fits, or that there's some expectation that it should happen or it could happen.
Yeah, there's that kind of beauty with ambient music in a way where you just set something up that's just going to play through most of it, and you can improvise, you can do all kinds of different things, you can take it anywhere. I love that. From the beginning of the piece, the sound sort of reminded me of something that might be produced from a modular synthesizer, maybe like a Buchla or something was where my mind went. It was sort of the timbre, and also the not just the timbre though, the repetitive patterns that were reminiscent of sequencers. Was that how you made it, or
Or
was that an
even like an
inspiration?
arpeggiator, like it had that type of vibe to it where, well, so it was originally done as I did did just a MIDI version of this to be for instruments. Because I had this idea of maybe like three clarinets or something, mm-hmm. And maybe like a fourth bass clarinet. And so I was messing around with just some really bad MIDI patches. And I was like, oh, hey, let me get the Juno 106 that I have. I think it's in the background here. There's equipment on it. But great, I was like, oh, let me just run it through the Juno and hear how that sounds. And that's when it became like a hardware synth piece, you know, because it was just like, oh, this I really love. And that's that the bell tone that you hear. I'm nice. Like, oh, that's what I fell in love with. So then I was like, I don't think this is a clarinet piece anymore. I don't think this is for other instrumentation. I think this is like a hardware synth, you know, piece. And of course, my Juno is so old and it malfunctions so badly that I ended up having to use a software version of it. But some of the imperfections and some of the mistakes that the Juno makes quite often, I incorporated some of that in the piece as well,
just to kind of
have some of that noise and just kind of sounds. But it's funny, it started off as just like, let me do a MIDI mockup of an acoustic piece, and then it just became. Yeah, it just became like, it was like tubular bells, like it was like 1970 something. And, you know, I just had a huge, you know, one of those synths that would fill a room and the arpeggiators just running amok.
Yeah, that was sort of my impression. I could picture almost, I was thinking of Morton Subotnick or something when it first came on with those repetitive patterns. And I was just thinking of you patching things in a modular synthesizer.
You know, the one thing I love about Subotnick too is that he often would talk about how having electronic music and creating electronic music was such a gift as a composer, because you no longer were reliant on, you know, musicians and to perform it exactly the way you wanted to or help you reach your vision. You could kind of go in the studio and do it independently. And I thought that must have been really freeing for him in like the 60s and that type of thing. But I actually find myself the opposite way now. It's like, I can do anything in the studio. I can imagine anything I want. But I think the flip for me is, you know, how do I sort of bring that into the real world? And, you know, with some upcoming performances I have, that's sort of the idea, is how do I make these things that are quote unquote perfect in the studio? How do I bring those into a performance space and make them interesting and still have that sort of kernel of what the original idea was.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's something that a lot of people are trying to reclaim about the liveness with electronic music these days. I know I've felt it myself, and I have a vague memory. We may have touched on this way back when you interviewed me a year or two ago. That working with performers or preparing an electronic piece for a live version, these new things emerge that you never would have thought of in a studio. That
absolutely,
yeah.
And I think it's tough to like kind of let go of the control and just be like, you know what, this is going to be a different thing. It's going to be a new thing. It's going to be an other thing. It's not the original thing.
It can be scary.
Yeah, and like I said, like letting go of that control can be tricky, but
it can also be therapeutic.
Yeah, and then it becomes this other cool thing too. Then so then you're just not, you know, pressing play. And like I had Heather Stebbins on a few weeks ago, and she just mentioned the pressing play and like Homer Simpson just disappearing back into the hedge, you know, after your best play.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I feel like that's just the spot on, like, you know, what it could be, but
yeah. Another sound that really grabbed me was these vocal samples that drifted in and out of the mix. Was that from anything in particular? Did you sample something specific for those vocal samples?
Yeah. Or? So, you know, the name of the piece is Throwaway Culture, and it's kind of just this idea of, you know, recycling stuff, but then of course not recycling stuff. Like the idea of throwaway culture is like creating products that can just be sort of thrown away or are obsolete, you know, months or a certain time after you buy them. Like there's just, it's planned obsolescence, right? Yeah. And so that's actually from another part of the album. So those vocal samples are on Corporate Responsibility Pledge. You hear them there. I use them again later in some of the other tracks, sometimes more obscured, sometimes not. So I took a real sort of like recycle, reuse, and reduce sort of approach to the album. And I think it just lends itself to the larger idea of the album of, like, you know, sort of the time and sort of cost of being creative and creating something creative. But I think it just worked really great in the track. I mean, there was a similar, you know, pitch material. But more so, I think it's just nice as when you're listening to this in the context of a larger album, you hear this piece that feels very different. It feels like a synth piece. It's not a chamber piece. It's not chamber music. And all of a sudden that sample kind of comes back in a new way, in a similar way. And I hope that is like rewarding for the listener, but also just kind of, I don't know. I feel like if they feel like it's a little bit like cheap, like you're just kind of recycling this thing, I feel like I like that too, because I think, you know, music often gets looked at as this commodity and like, hey, we need 5 minutes here in this part of the play, the theater production, whatever it is, a gallery opening. Hey, we need 10 minutes of music. And it's like, okay, cool. Do you need it to be good? And they're like, no, we just need 10 minutes of music. Do what you do, you know? And you're just like, okay, like, let me fill some time.
Or like a Netflix special or something. We need some music.
Right.
Let's go on songtrader.com and license a 5 minutes of whatever.
Yeah. You know, I tell the story, I always solicit, you know, opinions and goals from students at the start of the semester. Recently I had a student, I was like, you know, what's your goal for the class? And their goal was to create BGM. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know what that was because I'm an old man, I guess. So I didn't know what BGM was. So I went and looked it up and I was like, that stands for background music. And I was just like, so this person's like passion and goal is to create background music, and that's fine. Like, I'm not, you know, whatever. I'm not like putting a value judgment on it, but they didn't say like, I want to be the next, you know, big rapper. I want to like, you know, be the next John Williams or like create or, you know, be the next, you know, whatever, like some, you know, it was, I just want to learn how to write background music to be used in commercial content to be released. I was like, that's so specific. Your dream is so specific.
Yeah. That's amazing. That's your goal. I mean, no judgment, but it's like your goal is to be ignored, you know,
to write music. But there's an art to that. Ignoring. There's like such an art to like writing music that's totally not too obtrusive. And but still, it seemed odd from an 18-year-old to, you know, 20-year-old student to be like that. I want to fit into this other thing. And I don't know, maybe I'd be in a different place if I had the same mindset.
It's like the new Muzak, I guess, or you know, same with what is it? Lo-fi hip hop beats to study slash chill to playlists. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Get on a chill playlist or ambient music often gets thrown onto. I get put on these, not thrown on. I'm happy to be on a playlist, but definitely like chill and, you know, ambient playlists. Yeah. And
it has its place for sure. This kind of music. I mean, I've put it on when I was reading or doing something and I don't want to be distracted, but I want some nice sound in my environment.
Yeah, and that's a whole thing too. I feel like for a lot of the pieces on the album, they're like that. They still have this, like, it can be on in the background. Mm-hmm. You could sit there in chamber music, you know, concert music style, listen to every note, and you could really enjoy it, I bet, that way. But I also feel like you could just have it on in the back and have it be, you know, 40 minutes or 50 minutes of you know, some other task or experience that you're doing. So it could be BGM, I guess, as well.
Sure. Yeah. I think there's something in your music that, I always really like, you know, in all of my favorite music, you can listen to it on various different levels, I think. And it's rewarding to listen to it at a surface level or in the background. And it's also rewarding to sort of take a deeper dive into it. I think that's a sweet spot for a composer to hit. I think you did well with this album.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, thanks so much for doing this, Rodney. I really appreciate it. Before we go, why don't you let us in a little bit on what you're doing, you know, kind of tell us where we can hear some more of your music, but then also, you know, just what are some of the things you've been up to lately?
I've been going through a bit of a dry spell lately creatively. So I don't have any new music to check out at the moment, but all of my music is on my website, rodneydeplessis.com. My software is up there too, links to Emission Control 2 and a few other things you can download and try out for free. So I definitely encourage you to check that out. And I just recently got a new job, professorship. So I've been teaching, preparing for that has taken a lot of time. So I haven't had a lot of time to be creative, other than creative in my course preparations, but.
Right. And that's, you know, that's a whole thing. And that's something that I really love about teaching is that once you kind of get that sort of focused and kind of, in line, then you can kind of, you know, use the time, you know, it enables you so much time to be creative and,
You know, and there's a certain aspect to it that scratches the creative itch when I'm putting together a lesson plan and, you know, how do I creatively engage the students and teach? I could just throw information at them or I could be creative and make it fun.
And the thing I love, I find this in, maybe you've already found this because, you know, you've done some teaching, is that all the things I'm struggling with, like the students will bring it up in class. Like they'll be like, you know, I'm having this thing where I'm just going through like, I'm not really inspired to like create anything. So I'll end up giving them just wonderful advice about how to, you know, you're responsible for your own inspiration and all this and that. And I always, at the end of the class, I have to kind of remind myself and be like, okay, well, you can take this advice too, Doug. Like, you know, you just don't have to give it to other people. But so it can be really rewarding in that, I think. And you'll find that if you haven't already, that a lot of times the same stuff you're going through, they're as creatives, they're working through it too.
Yeah. So I'm definitely looking forward to keep teaching and also to get back into writing some music. It's been too long. I'm starting to feel that itch. I need to put something out.
Thanks to Rodney for sharing his time with us and giving us his two cents about throwaway culture and the album as a whole. Be on the lookout for all the great new creative things Rodney will be doing. In the meantime, if you enjoyed this episode, please check out other episodes in the series and always like, subscribe, or leave a comment on your preferred podcasting app. I'm Dr. Doug Bielmeyer, and this has been The Process.